Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast. Profoundly honored today to host return guest, platinum-selling musician John Ondrasik. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show so I could continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. So everybody knows the Jews control Hollywood. What? You didn't know that? You didn't get the memo? The Jews control the movies, the Jews control television, and of course, the Jews control music. And if you believe that, you are ignorant at best and anti-Semite at worst. This ridiculous accusation is nothing more than a modern permutation of the centuries-old Jews control the world blood libel. Need proof? Look at the morally reprehensible response of the entertainment industry to the vicious and barbaric October 7th Hamas terrorist attacks on Israel. In any other world, such animalistic savagery would be denounced in the strongest of terms. In today's entertainment world, it's celebrated. Well, very few entertainers have had the moral clarity and fortitude to stand up against this terror, to stand up for the Jews. John Ondrasik is one of the few, a virtuous voice singing above the cacophony, fearlessly fighting the evil that has consumed the intoxicated industry around him. John Ondrasik, otherwise known as Pfeiffer Fighting, needs no introduction. So, as to optimize the time we have with him today, I hope you'll watch the first Yoga of War podcast episode that John did with me, as it really shines a light on this incredible man's heart and soul. John, thank you so much for joining me again.
Sean, it's great to be with you. Nice to see your smile. Namaste.
Namaste. I want to tell you, I of course I associate you as Superman. Anytime I think John, I think Superman. But today I have my Captain America shirt on because I was really sort of reflecting a lot on your music as I showed last time. I have like all the CDs because that's how old I am. But that America is a running theme. In I never like necessarily thought of your music as Americana, but really, ultimately it is. And I do want to talk about that. But first, it's been almost exactly a year actually since you first came on the show, and it's sort of dizzying to think about how much has happened since. Your advocacy has been honestly, a beacon of light in a very dark tunnel. You stood virtually alone in an entertainment industry that is swarming with anti-Israel activists, and it can't be easy to be you. So, first, thank you for never giving up on the fight, not even for a minute. And second, the kind of abuse you've taken online for standing up for Israel certainly takes its toll. So I just want to ask, a year later, how are you doing?
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate that, and you're certainly welcome. I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little woozy because we just kind of finished a 2-week tour, 9 shows in 10 days, and I spoke at the RJC. And obviously, it's been a pretty consuming year. But whenever I kind of think about myself, I think about the hostage families, what they've gone through. And I've been honored to speak and work with many of them. And they give me inspiration. Whatever bad day I have, it's a drop in the bucket to compared to what they've gone through. And of course, we're kind of in this euphoric kind of aftermath of a miracle, which is the living hostages coming home, which I think very few of us believed would happen. I think we thought we may get a few, but to get all of them, I think as much as we said, it's going to happen. We believe it. And you have to say those things because, miracles do come true. But so I think, I personally am in and feel this joy for the first time. We've had very little to celebrate over the last 2 years. But we have, to see the pictures of the hostages with their families. But also, we think of the hostage families whose loved one did not come home. We think of the IDF soldiers. We think of the innocents that have been lost in this war. But at the same time, I feel like I can kind of take a breath, Shauna, for the first time in 2 years, could take a breath. Certainly, there's a lot to do. It's a skirmish in the overall war, but I'm just very grateful to President Trump, Marco Rubio, the whole team, from kind of doing what none of us thought could do. So I'm actually good, and I hope you're good too. I'm doing my 10 minutes of yoga every day. That certainly helps. So I'll keep on doing that.
Are you doing it with your daughter, or did she get
She's
her?
way too advanced for me. No, mine's old man yoga. I have my little 10-minute routine. I have my sit-ups, and but for guys like me, that when you're on the road and running 6 hours in the van or the bus and performing, that little stuff goes a long way.
You're looking good, John. I can see it from the video. Honestly, I watch your face. I'm like, wow, he's looking good. Well, I'm glad to see that you're taking care of yourself. It's funny you say you hope I'm good. I always tell people, just don't even ask how I am anymore. My head just runs circles all day trying to figure out how we got here. And I'm hoping that today's conversation might grant some new light on that question. I want to take a step back though. One question I'd like to ask personal about you also is, so last time you were on the show, of course, we discussed your history as standing up, for quite a few social justice, causes. Your advocacy for the Israeli hostages being only the most recent of your efforts. I have to admit, as a younger woman, I was confounded by the name Five for Fighting because it didn't make sense to me, like how the word fighting came in with such a calming body of work. I realized after we talked last time, not realized you enlightened me that Five for Fighting is actually a hockey term that refers to putting bad actors in the penalty box. Many of your songs, World and Freedom Never Cries, would be like two that like immediately come to mind, have always served as a sort of referee to Western virtues that may have been put on ice. I'm wondering if that passion for moral activism was in the back of your mind when you originally chose the name Five for Fighting.
Well, the short story is the record company wanted a band name because in the late 90s, it was Lilifair, boy bands, grunge music. The male singer-songwriter did not exist. And I sarcastically, as a big hockey fan, suggested Five for Fighting, expecting them to say, "You're crazy." And they're like, "We love it." I'm like, "You're crazy because you're right. It sounds like we should be opening for Metallica." But I do have to say, part of me when I first started, I struggled for 15 years to kind of realize my childhood passion of doing this, being a singer-songwriter. So I certainly had a certain, kind of fight and will just to stay in the game. But as you mentioned, I think, over the last, 4 or 5 years particularly, for me, I end my shows now with saying, "Fight the good fight." And I believe we're fighting the good fight. And we are in this kind of battle for civilization. And so, in a strange way, the name makes more sense now than it did back then. Now, I wish there were just five, musicians or, people fighting our good fight. As you mentioned, it's been just heartbreaking and despicable to see the silence of the arts. In Hollywood, at least there's a few, right? You have Deborah Messing, you have Patricia Heaton. You have a few, but in the arts of music, there's David Draiman. He's Jewish, of course. And you mentioned you opened your remarks with Jews control everything, and I have to say, I laughed, but I also cringed because many of the silent leaders of the music industries and the arts are Jewish. Ari Emanuel is the probably most powerful person in Hollywood. And he seems to have no comment. And even though Spielberg has said a few things, I think they're very weak. So to me, what's been equally disappointing is the silence of the Jewish leaders in the arts and the Jewish artists. So it just shows you how kind of broken the world is. But I do have to say, I'm starting to feel a little bit of a turn. I think there's a long way to go, but I think there's a few people. Like the other day, John Mellencamp came out
Yes.
and said, if you say anything about the Jews, F you. And John Mellencamp is as left as you can get,
Yeah.
right? So I think you're starting to see some permission, some sanity. Again, we have a long way to go, but the arts are critical to this war. We're
Yeah.
not going to win this war. Israel always wins the war. They lose the propaganda war. I spoke about this at the RJC last weekend. If we don't deploy the arts as soft power, we will lose because that's how you get to the kids. That's how you get to the heart. That's how you open minds. So that's really my focus now. As far as the war goes, I mean, I know everybody's still depressed and angry and deservedly so, but if you just step back for a second, if you could have imagined 2 years ago after October 7th, when people thought Israel may not be existing in a couple of years, if you look at the decimation of Hezbollah, if you look at Iran, who's been neutered, the nuclear sites taken out of the game, if you look at Hamas, which again is a shell of itself, if you look at the world kind of starting to rally around the Abraham Accords, if you look at many of the Middle Eastern countries basically participating in this ceasefire deal, I think as a Jewish person, you're still kind of in the trauma of October 7th. But if you look at the world, I don't think Israel's ever been stronger. So I
Never.
think
Yeah.
there's a lot to be optimistic for,
Yeah.
cautiously, but
Yes.
I think it's important for Jewish people to not forget that.
Yeah. That's the kind of world that I want, the one that works from the Abraham Accords rather than from war. And there is going to be always two ways to win this war. I don't really want to make this about the war. I want to make this about the arts, but there is always the peace out. Peace out, dude. Or the war inside, and I think that peace is the way. And something that came to me when you were talking about the silence of Ari Emanuel and in Spielberg's I've only heard one very mealy-mouthed statement from him where he equated it with Islamophobia. So I don't really care that count that as a statement, but. We have this biblical reference. I mean, in fact, if you go to not Hostages Square, but the Dizengoff, I don't know, is it called Dizengoff Square, where they've turned it into a hostage memorial as well? You see that there are a lot of lions and lambs that have been laid everywhere for this biblical reference about peace will be when the lions lie down with the lambs. And it just came to me that we're talking about like the silence of the lambs here, the people who are afraid to fight, and so they stay silent. But anyway, let us move on. So I do want to start by talking about your actual work for the hostages, and then I do want to get into the broader aspects of entertainment, and in how entertainment can help save the world. But this is a question I touched upon last time, but it's been a year, so I'd like to present it again, that your musical tributes to the hostages, from OK to Song for the Hostages, we had just come out days before we talked last time, to the reimagined Superman, have shown your deep and profound commitment to this cause. In Hebrew, we say Dayenu. One song would have been enough. Dayenu. Two songs was an incredible gesture. Dayenu. Three is just superhuman. So Dayenu, it would have been enough. What is it about this cause in particular that compelled you to immerse yourself so deeply and profoundly in fighting it, fighting for it, I should say?
Well, I think two things. First of all, it really for me has nothing to do with religion. It really has nothing to do necessarily with Israel by itself. When we abandon our allies in Afghanistan, I spent 2 years working to evacuate people from Afghanistan, virtually all of them Muslim. When Putin invaded Ukraine, I went to Ukraine and I'm still doing work for Ukraine. And after October 7th, again, if Hamas is not evil, I don't know what is. And at the same time, I do think Israel has a different significance than both of those that are critical. Israel really is leading the fight for civilization. This has been going on for decades in our college campuses. You see Europe basically collapsing in front of our eyes. And frankly, without this new administration who actually gets it, Israel would be alone. You know, they're fighting not for just Jewish people, they're fighting for Judeo-Christian values, Western values. They're fighting for my kids, my future grandkids, and the survival of basically all we love about freedom and democracy that I've been writing about for 20 years. So I get that and I appreciate that. So if I can play a small part in supporting Israel and pushing America and other countries to get it and understand that this is not about religion, it's not about territory, it's not about oppressors. It's literally about Western values, good versus evil. I will certainly do that, and I'll continue to do that. And I am so grateful to Benjamin Netanyahu. Again, it's similar to Trump. A lot of people love him, a lot of people hate him. It's like, thank you for having the courage and the clarity to lead this fight. I love John Fetterman. I love Richie Torres. I love anybody who's on the right side of this. Politics, to me, are almost trivial when it comes to this fight for civilization. So we take every ally. So again, for me, I know it's I'm rambling here, but for Israel, and also I've met so many amazing people, through this last 2 years, just incredible heroes, IDF soldiers, Aviva Klompas, go down this, all these amazing people. And so I feel like, I've kind of been adopted in a certain way by the Jewish community. And I've, my experiences have changed my life, being in Israel when they were bombed by Iran and seeing, the courage of the people firsthand. And the next day, everybody's at the beach and playing volleyball and, going to dinner. And I'm like, that doesn't happen anywhere in the world, but Israel and this kind of ability to find joy in the worst possible times and sometimes horrific times and to move forward, I've applied some of those things into my life. So again, I feel blessed to have to kind of fallen into the Jewish culture. Of course, I have a lot of Jewish friends, my wife's a Berkowitz, but to be immersed kind of in this community has been a blessing for me, and I think my family as well.
Oh, well, that is so wonderful to hear. And believe me, you're welcomed with open arms by the whole community that honors and respects you so much. But a thing that I want to bring up is you make a good point, and a vital point that this is a battle for civilization and humanity. It happens to have taken place in Israel, but this is not anything. I mean, it's I think far more sadistic, but it's nothing particularly different than what we saw 9/11 in America. We're talking about the same enemy, and yet the world has turned their ire not on Israel. I mean, yes, on Israel, but on Jews as a whole. We're seeing pogroms. We're seeing unprecedented, literally unprecedented, including the Holocaust, unprecedented levels of blatant and global anti-Semitism. Ultimately, regardless of what anybody thinks about Israel or how they're executing this war, everybody, non-Jews, Jews, should care about Jews. I shouldn't even have to say Jews should care about Jews, but in these days, I actually even have to say that. But not just because Jews are people and should be treated just like normal human beings, as Coldplay's Chris Martin so clearly explained. But it's something bigger than that. It's not just the hate, but the hater. What does Jew hatred that has taken over the globe say about broader society? And why should everyone care about this pandemic of anti-Semitism?
I think there's a lot in that. And certainly I'm no expert, but I do think, one thing I think is important to understand that many, particularly from the left, much of the Jew hatred is also America hatred. They hate all things freedom. They hate all things liberty. You notice at the Free Palestine rallies, there's never any American flags unless they're being burned. So I
Right.
think part of it's that. But it's not only that, because we're starting to see a lot of Jew hatred from the right. We spoke a lot about that at the RJC conference. And again, you can't say those people are anti-American. I think their view of America first is wrong. But I also think it's a result of feckless leadership around the world. If you look at the leaders of France and the UK, Canada, Australia, who are basically rewarding the Hamas terrorist atrocities with Palestinian states. If you look at the UN, which is a completely corrupt organization, you're right. It runs deep. And a lot of these countries, they need an enemy, and Israel's a convenient enemy, or their people will come for them. So I think in the Middle East, you see that, but you're starting to see that change a little bit because I think, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, they don't want, there's a reason they don't take refugees. They understand the threat to them. And I think some of them actually want a better world. I think some of them understand this cannot continue. We want a better world for our people. So again, I think we're really on this tipping point, and I think that's why every voice matters. And it goes, as you said, way beyond Israel. And it's going to take leadership. It's going to take convention. It's going to take people voting. Look, 30, 35% of Jewish people voted for Mamdani, right? So there's a problem within the Jewish community. And that has to be addressed. I think there's been a very poor showing from Jewish organizations in America. The ADL, for one, whose kind of viewpoint has kind of led to a lot of these problems, kind of empowering folks who basically want to destroy Israel and America. So I hope there's a, kind of, I don't want to say come to Jesus moment, but a moment of reflection on that what we've been doing has not only been not working, but kind of enabling the bad guys. So I think there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in reflection. And obviously, the politics in Israel is insane. And, there's nothing like it, which is what a democracy is all about. But again, I think we have to understand that the consequences are so great that if we don't acknowledge it, fight it, condemn it, I was really pleased to see at the RJC basically every senator that was there, every congressman, many of them not Jewish, condemn unequivocally this kind of rise of anti-Semitism on the right. And we need more of that. We need more voices. We need to stamp it out now, unlike the left, who did not. And you see their elected leaders are basically the problem, not the solution. So there's a lot to do on so many different levels. But again, I always look at it as we're on the right side. We are the good guys. We are on the side of truth. Do we make mistakes? Do we say dumb things? Of course. But we're the good guys, so that energy propels us forward. I was talking to Douglas Murray, the amazing Douglas Murray, last weekend. And he has things that I like to say. He says, one truth, and I'm going to probably mess up his quote, but one truth can permeate 1,000 lies. So we have to remember we are the truth. And there's a lot of lies and a lot of liars. And but it's our job to use all these bullets, songs, whatever it takes, to fight back and win for everybody, for even the for the kids who've been indoctrinated, for the kids who think they're doing something virtuous. We have to save them. We have to save the countries who've been kind of plummeted into this kind of dark land of no of what Europe is becoming is of no hope. So again, there's a lot to do, but again, I still feel, I feel optimistic and I feel energy, and I think we can't, it's been exhausting, but we have to, we're running a marathon here, right? It's not a sprint, we're running a
That's
marathon.
right. Yes, and in the point that you make, Eshe, I actually made with a far left client recently, and she really got upset about it. But it's true. Last week, Jew hatred on the right reached a weird crescendo, starting with the Ole Miss as far as I'm concerned, debacle, and then the Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, and then the Heritage Foundation, and it all snowballed really, really quickly in a matter of days. But you're absolutely right that the well, let's call them the Republicans, the right, were very, very quick, top to bottom, to condemn this anti-Semitism that seems to be encroaching on the far right, wherein the left is kowtowing to it and leaning into it. And in that is a very, very important difference. These aren't the same hatred as far as how much it's penetrating the base. But we do have to keep our eye on trends at the same time. And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't worrisome. Anyway. We don't really need to talk about American politics too much, but the Jew hatred, every society that's been consumed by Jew hatred has consumed itself in the end, and that's really something that we need to keep in mind. So, I believe, John, that you've been to Israel twice since October 7th. Is that accurate?
Just the one
2023?
time. Yeah, just the one
Oh, you
time.
only went once.
I was there, that week in April where Iran bombed for the first time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that you had gone back a second time. So anyway, in your advocacy for the hostages, you formed a particular emotional bond with one hostage, Alon Ohel, miraculously home today. He was an aspire is an aspiring piano player, and you also made a bond with his family. His mother and brother in particular, I believe. I'd like to play the new version of Superman that you performed this April for Alon and the hostages. Is that okay?
Sure.
And then we'll discuss it after. Okay, now, like last time, we're gonna see how well I do with tech. Stay tuned. This is always good. Okay, I'm just going to do entire screen because the application is missing. Okay, here we go.
This is for Alon. All the hostages and their families, may they be home soon. I can't stand to fly. I'm not that naive. I'm just out to find the better part of me. I'm more than a bird, I'm more than a plane, more than some pretty face beside a train. And it's not easy to be me. Wish that I could cry, fall upon my knees, find a way to fly to a home I will soon see. It may sound absurd, don't be naive. Even heroes have the right to bleed. I may be disturbed, won't you concede? Even heroes have the right to dream, and it's not easy to be me. Above and away, away from me. Now it's alright, you can all sleep sound tonight. I'm not crazy or anything. I can't stand to fly. I'm not that naive. Men weren't meant to ride with clouds between their knees. I'm only a man in a funny red sheet, digging for kryptonite on this one-way street. Only a man, a funny red sheet, looking for special things inside of me, inside of me, inside of me, inside of me, inside of me. I'm only a man in a funny red sheet, only a man looking for a dream. Only a man in a funny red sheet, it's not easy. It's not easy to be.
Amazing.
What beautiful pictures there at the end.
It's really quite overwhelming to imagine all of these hostages, imagine what they've been through, imagine being home again. It's just really, really mind-blowing. I'm wondering, John, with the personal bond you created with his family, how did it affect you to see Alon and the other 19 living hostages finally released on October 13th?
Yeah, I think, like everybody, we were just, crying, tears of joy. And at the same time, I was working with Rachel Goldberg when Hirsch was killed. You think about what they're going through right now. So you go, it's a lot of thoughts. I think you almost felt like you were dreaming. This can't be real. And I remember kind of the day of the releases, when, we're all following, it's 4 in the morning in LA, but we're all following it online. And, the Red Cross has the first batch of hostages. And I think none of us believed it till we saw kind of that picture of the hostages reuniting with their families. So yeah, it's just, you just feel so good for them and what they've been through. And of course there's a lot of healing to come. But yeah, as I said, we've all deserved this moment of joy. We've worked so hard, and to see them reconcile again, for Adit, all the other hostages, they just are, incredible humans, just how they do got up every day. I don't know. So, for them alone, I think we all could only just feel wonderful joy.
Agree. I'm just curious, on a side note, if you read Elie Shrabi's book, Hostage.
I've not read it.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I'm so in deep with all this stuff. I will certainly read it one day. You also have to like find ways to keep your mental health good. I have been corresponding with Edith. I'll be talking to her actually this weekend. And alone, he had a surgery for his eye. And I saw him performing on Israeli television, which is wonderful. So, it's a long road, as we've seen with many hostage families. But yeah, it's I'm really pleased that we did that version that you showed, particularly because, as many people know, Superman was the song for 9/11. We spoke about that earlier in the show. And so the connection of the hostages, that song, October 7th, 9/11, I think is pretty easy to see. And I'm very pleased that that video kind of, globally resonated. And it's another example of what we talked about, how we have to use the arts to fight this war, get to minds that have been closed. And that video, particularly more than the other two, I think did that. And it was Adit's idea, so I give, she reached out to me, what can we do musically? She sent me that picture of Alon in his pajamas, his Superman pajamas. And it was very, very quick that we understood, okay, this is almost kind of kismet. You know, this makes a lot of sense. And so yeah, for all of those people, it's like, you know, we're just so happy.
The reason I ask about the book is, as you may know, Ellie was with Alone most of
Yeah.
the time, and he is a big part of the book, to be honest. And the book is a very easy read, a surprisingly easy read. It sort of leaves out, I would say, 95% of the brutality, and it's really more about psychologically what was going on. So when you are ready for it, it's not as traumatic as you might think it was. And because of your connection to Alone, I think in Hirsch was also with them
Yeah.
for a time. So,
Yep.
just curious, do you have any plans to visit Alon and perhaps collaborate on a song?
Well, again, I think, you know, my, you know, as from the beginning, my, you know, I
Yeah.
look at my role as to support and shine the light on people who are going through horrible experiences. So I'm here for that family
Yeah.
and all the hostage families. I'm here for Rachel. I'm here for everybody. And if there's something that they feel is good for them and their son and Alone, I'll continue to do that. I know a lot of people want to see the John Alone Superman duet, and I would be honored to do that. But I think, you know, we have to remember what these people have gone through, not
Yes.
just the hostages, but their families. And whatever they would like to do, you know, I'm happy to do, and I'm sure, I'll be coming back to Israel next year. There's other things we're doing here in the States, kind of larger kind of events and to continue to support this fight. And again, I think we're moving into the phase now of, okay, so how do we address this global issue that you
Yeah.
talked about, right? The war is basically won, the hostages, I know we need the remains of the rest. That's basically coming to an end. So how are we going to move forward? I don't think it's like we can just say shrug our shoulders, say, okay, that, you know, that's over, you know. So I think we're moving into that phase of, you know, again, combating this anti-Semitism, the rise on the right, the world. But I do think, you know, we have the wind at our back, and we need to take advantage of that.
It's definitely a time of recalibration. As you know, my sister went to your show at the Coach House a couple weeks ago. She cried and cried over your tribute to the hostages, but also the fact that you sang a Steve Perry song because she's crazy about Steve
Me
Perry.
too.
And also that you had the surprise that your opening act happened to be your daughter.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of tears being poured at that concert. You really haven't limited your advocacy to online media, which a lot of people do because it's safer in a way. You take a lot more abuse, of course, but you know, it's bots, it's whatever, and you could just sort of be like, yeah, whatever, whatever, right? But you've really put it front and center in your live in-person performances, bold and unapologetic. She sent me an unbelievable recording of the tribute that you did to the hostages in the middle of your concert. I know what the response was that night. It sounds like there wasn't a dry eye in the house, but I'm curious, what the overall audience response has been when you talk about hostages in your shows. Do you think at this point all or most of your current fan base know about and support your Israel advocacy?
No, we actually saw that at that show, actually, when somebody was very upset about me singing a song for the hostages, basically started berating my family members. And, you know, the reality is I have to carry more security on tour. There are people that will stand up and start screaming at my shows. But again, it's just the world we live in. And it's not a lot. You know, it's not a lot. I think a good majority of people who come to the shows kind of know my worldview. They know blood on my hands for Afghanistan. They know, you know, Ukraine, and so they understand that I have no problem. You know, I don't get on a soapbox and lecture. I don't do a
Yeah.
speech. I just say, you know, good guys, bad guys, here's something I did. And again, it's America, and that's, you know, when somebody does that at a show, part of me thinks, you know, how great are we to live in this country? where they can do that. You know, I don't say this to them. Oh, I did once because the guy went crazy, but I said, you know, if you did this in, you know, in Gaza and you stood up and started screaming, you know, criticizing the powers, you'd basically be tortured with your family in an hour. You know, so there's you know, I also look at it, if nobody hates you, you're not really doing anything. You know, I think that's like the Spielberg and a lot of these Hollywood folks. They're so scared of,
Yes.
you know, of their brand and they want to hire actors who hate Jews, you know, the cowardice there. It's like, you know, if nobody hates you, you're not moving the needle because there's a lot of
Yeah.
very hateful people doing hateful things. And frankly, the vitriol I've been getting from the right in the last couple of weeks is equally as horrible and gross as I ever got from the left, you know,
Yeah.
maybe without the death threats. But again, so yeah, you know, if you're going to do this to me, you might as well do it. And I'm also at the stage of my career where, you know what? I don't care. I don't care. You know,
Yeah.
I just don't care. You know, I care
Yeah.
about the safety of my musicians. I care about the safety of my opening acts, my daughter, of course. I care about the safety of the fans who come to my shows. So we take a lot of precautions and we have people. So, because it is the real world. I wish we weren't in that world. But we're in that world, and I look forward to the day where I don't have to do that.
It's sad that that's the hashtag normal, not normal.
Yeah.
We're accepting that you having to bring extra security because you dare to speak up against terror, is really a frightening reality that I think not enough people are reckoning with. On a related note, I could tell you, I want to talk about sort of the broader experience because I could tell you that from my personal experience, we've had also a morally reprehensible and utterly abhorrent anti-Israel and rabidly anti-Semitic response from the yoga world. And it's really assured me beyond the shadow of a doubt that this supposed like peace-loving community that for 24 years I have called my own is no longer mine. I simply cannot relate to or connect with this communal depravity. I don't know what else to call it. It turns out that they're just not my people. I'm wondering if you have similar feelings about the music industry. Do you feel like it's a community, not an industry, but a community that you're still a part of, even if you disagree with their moral choices? Or has this moment come with sort of a stark awakening that you no longer wish to be a part of the greater community of musicians?
Well, again, I've always kind of been an anomaly. You know, I've been writing about freedom and stuff like that, and a lot of those folks don't seem to care or like that. And so I've never really been invited to those parties, or if I was, I typically wouldn't go. But I do have to say, I've been incredibly disappointed, particularly in the artists of my generation and the artists that stood on stage with me at the Concert for New York and condemned Osama bin Laden. You know, it's not an excuse, but I understand how some of the younger bands have been indoctrinated, like all our kids. You know, they've been indoctrinated, the Free Palestine lie, the genocide lie, it's fashion, but you know, so has 50% of American kids. So I have a little understanding. I don't like it, but the artists of my generation know better. Many of them are on the left, but they know better. They stood on that stage after 9/11. And they have been either silent or, frankly, pro-Hamas. So that disgusts me. Does it shock me? No, but it disgusts me. And the fact that there's virtually nobody out there, and the silence of basically all of the Jewish and leaders in the entertainment business. Now, I have to, you know, their Paramount Pictures has been very good.
Yes.
So
Well,
I have, you know,
why?
what's that?
Why?
Well, we know who, you know, who runs it, you know, and Skydance and all that stuff. And, you know, we're seeing, Barry Weiss coming into CBS. You know, we're seeing signs of actual courage.
Yeah.
But without those couple anomalies, we haven't seen much. So yeah, so I've never, I've a long ago have, you grow up wanting to be on Rolling Stone, and then they put a terrorist on the cover of their magazine. I'm like, no, I'm
Right.
not part of those guys.
Yeah.
And so again, and I do know there are a lot of people that share our views in Hollywood and in the music industry that don't speak up. And for those that don't, that have a platform, I remind you of 1938 when people did that. On the other hand, if you're a cameraman, if you're a makeup artist, if you're paying a mortgage, if you're a lighting guy, you don't make millions of dollars, I understand. You don't want to get blackballed. And so it's really tough. But yeah, I don't lose any sleep over it. I have great friends inside and outside. I love my bandmates, many of them who are frankly on the left. I have the people that I love and love me. I don't necessarily, put them in categories. I don't blackball them. I don't, I work with, amazing people who don't share my ideas. But yeah, I don't lose any sleep over it. I think they've made their own bed. History will judge them. And hopefully more and more like Mellencamp will come to the right side.
Yeah, it took a while, but I was surprised to see that he was actually honored as one of the he was honored as one of the top voices in this that I didn't know. I mean, maybe I just haven't been paying attention, but that was the first I even heard of him speaking up. But okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious though, do you think there's an important distinction between community and tribalism as it applies to activism in the arts?
That's a very interesting question. Unfortunately, I think community has become tribalism. We're so tribal. We're so locked in our positions, and we can't give an inch to give the other side any win. And I keep coming back to this, but that's why the arts are so important. The arts basically tones down tribalism. It's a way for people to talk to each other, for listen to each other. I said this at the RJC. So when I went out and played my song for Afghanistan, Blood on My Hands, in deep blue states, a lot of people were not happy with that because it condemned the administration. But they listened and we talked. And sometimes we agreed that, we have a lot more in common than we think. When I go into some deep red states and I play my Ukraine songs, you get a lot of eyes rolling. But when they see the video, when we talk about it, again, I think it's an avenue to discussion. The arts open the heart, which leads to the mind. So again, I think all of these things we're talking about, to kind of get the world back on a sane platform, the arts is going to lead the way. And I'm going to need, I can't do it myself. I'm going to need allies like Mellencamp. Patricia Heaton's been amazing. Deborah Messing. We need to build this, build this community of people who see it the right way, and look at it as a moral exercise, not a political one, because it is. It can't be tribal. It can't be like, well, we hate Netanyahu for this, or we love Trump so that it's like. No, take all that out of it. This is a moral fight, and we have to present it that way. And welcome folks who may not totally agree with us, and build it. Because if we don't, again, lone voices like me—they're nice, but they don't really kind of move the needle for the masses. So, but as Douglas Murray said, it's like it's important to have these voices because they cut through the lies, they cut through. The propaganda, and like Zelensky in Ukraine, he's bringing people. He can't win the war alone, but he can bring people of good conscience with him. So I think that's our mission at this point.
Yeah, and when you did these protest songs, anthems, whatever you want to call it, what's the difference, what do you think, between a protest song and an anthem?
I have no idea. I just write songs and people can interpret them however they want. That's the neat thing about music. People interpret them in the way that matters to them. So it can be a protest song, it can be, activism, it could be just a song. Superman is just a song I wrote in an hour. And it's taken on all these kind of meanings, and that's because the world finds their way through them. I don't look at any of my songs as protest songs. I don't. I look at them as moral messages. I mean, if you think the Taliban's bad, That's my song. If you think Putin's bad, that's my song. If you think Hamas is bad, that's my song. To me, I'm not protesting anything. I'm just saying simple truths.
I would argue that is the difference between a protest song and an anthem, is that you're advocating for something rather than against something. You're advocating for morality. And there's also, I think, in my mind, there's a different sound or flavor to a protest versus an anthem. An anthem
Yeah.
is uplifting, and a protest is cutting things down. It's angry, it's drums, it's screaming, it's yelling, it's a lot of the working against something rather than towards a goal. But one thing I do want to say is that even if there were some people who opposed maybe the political underpinnings of songs that you've done for Ukraine or Afghanistan, Blood on My Hands, it would be ridiculous for me to ask you, though, like when you did the concert for New York, was there an artist who actually sang a song in support of Al-Qaeda? Or did
Right.
any, well, see, it makes you laugh. Did anyone
Yeah.
respond to Blood on My Hands with a song for the Taliban?
Yeah.
Or when you did the song for Ukraine,
Right.
did any artist create a song in favor of Russia? Because
Yeah.
that's what's going on right now. It's funny when I say it in that
Yeah.
context, but this is the nature of double standards, and double standards are the basis of Jew hatred. As ridiculous as it sounds, I mean, do these artists like literally not see how anti-Semitic and morally depraved their support of Islamic terrorists now is when you sing about Israel, that they are singing against it, they are parading across the stage for Palestine. Like, do they not get it?
Well, they certainly don't get it. And again, we could talk for hours about why. They do live in a bubble. It's kind of become fashion, but you made a great point. There were no college protests, supporting the Taliban, right?
Right.
There were no college protests supporting Putin. There's no college protests, condemning Sudan for killing more people every week than were killed in Gaza. So again, it's really this leftist ideology, and Israel and the Jewish people have always been the first target, right? And you would hope the arts, would have the arts that is Live Aid, that is Sun City, that is the concert for New York, would have a higher IQ that would understand what's happening. But we've seen that they don't. We've seen that they don't. And it really is. I laugh because, when you're horrified and you're sad, you laugh a lot of times, right? You laugh because it's so absurd, the absurdity of it. But it is something we have to deal with. We have to recognize. I do think the time, I said this the other day too. It's like we can lament all these things, and I have been, and we've been doing it. We can lament this. Why is this? This is, in a sane world, blah, blah, blah. But it is the world we live in, right? So we have to understand that. And as you just said, we have to start, finding bright lights and bringing them together, exposing them, giving them a platform, and offering the olive branch, having these conversations, saving our kids. So we need to start moving in that phase because it is what it is. And all we can do is fight to change it. We have to do it. We have to fight to change it. And again, as I said, we know we have right on our side, and that goes a long way. And as I said, now that I think the war is over, it's easier to do that. And you already see the ceasefire folks moving on, right? They're all kind of, now that, Hamas is basically just shooting Gazans, they don't seem to care. The protests, I think, will subside. But the underlying Marxism, anti-Semitism, that's been feeding our college campuses for decades, that will continue. So we now we have to fight this global war, this global movement that, frankly, the arts is leading.
You and I are looking at different worlds. I see it ramping up since the ceasefire, not ramping down, because honestly, John, the whole point of this whole campaign was not to undermine Israel, it was to destroy the Jewish people. And you're going to see that the anti-Semitism online is just going to continue to ratchet up. But I will go ahead and go with your much more optimistic
I think we're
view of
both
that.
right. I think again, you don't see the rallies on the college campuses anymore, right? So that you don't see that. Does it? I mean, every night I don't turn on TV and see Free Palestine rallies at Columbia and UCLA, and there have been some consequences for people have starting to be fired, starting to be suspended. But I agree with you. Look, it's a long fight. The encroachment of the right is a massive problem that we have to deal with. But again, I do believe that I do see some tides turning. But again, it's a generational war. It's been a generational war. It's going to be a generational war. But we just have to continue, fighting the good fight. And that's what I'll do every day.
But artists like Imagine Dragons and Coldplay, they're a little more old school. I mean, they're new-ish, maybe compared to the 80s, but these are grown-ups. And previously, two of my favorite bands, to be honest, when I see them parading for Palestine on stage, I'm not convinced that they're sincere in their advocacy. I think that a lot of it is just acting as ignorant, like bandwagon jumpers that are virtue signaling for cheap applause. And in as you said, as things wind down, people need to be talking to them about it. Is this an initiative you've ever thought of leading? I asked you this last time as well, but there are people like you who perhaps could be used as a tool to educate these people that all they know is what they read on a placard, and what they read as a, on a placard is that Israel are Nazis, and therefore, of course, we hate Israel and we hate the Jews. But I do think that these are people who are acting really just out of ignorance, and that education could go a really long way. I have tremendous concern about the boycotts, the cultural boycotts. What was it, 4,000, I think, signed up. But this was not a year ago. This was not 6 months ago. This was, I think, about 6 weeks ago. I mean, this does not seem to be toning down in light of the ceasefire. And I'm really concerned, like, where does this boycott end? Is it like, okay, war's over, now we could work with Israelis again? Like, what is the end game here for the music industry or for entertainment?
Yeah, again, I don't know. And again, I wrote an op-ed about that letter, that folks, and but it was also condemned, by thousands of other artists, and Paramount led the way on that. And look, David Draiman has spoken to many of the icons in the heavy metal world. He knows them all. And he's had conversations with them, and many of them still go out with their kind of rants. And I don't know. The indoctrination runs deep. I agree with you. Like on Coldplay, is Chris Martin an anti-Semite? No. Is he a horrible, evil person? No. Is he being indoctrinated? Yes. Is he a useful idiot? Yes. Is he stupid? Yes. And that applies to many. But many, it's not useful idiocy. There is a dark side to them. They believe in this leftist, fascist world, point of view. Green Days, those folks, they've always been on that side of it. So again, I think you can certainly open the door. I'm happy to talk to anybody anywhere. They really don't want to hear from me, but I think if we create organizations and we create concerts, artistic events that speak our view, they'll have to look at it and they may not agree. They may fight us, but we have to take the war to them through the arts. And I do think over time, I've been pitching this forever. We need to do a concert with Israeli artists, Ukrainian artists, Afghan artists, Iranian artists to take it out of Israel, Gaza to good versus evil. And when you start doing that, it's really clear who's on the right side of history. And I think some of these folks who've either been on, on a tightrope or scared, they may want to be on the right side of history. But that takes funding, that takes strategy, that takes resources, that takes experts in the field. And frankly, folks have not wanted to step up. I can't do this alone. I need allies to do what exactly you're saying, where we go from here. I have, I think, good ideas and strategies that will do that, but you can't do it, at least I can't do it alone, and I need folks to understand this message, and hopefully they will, because I'm in for the long term. But you need allies with resources to get the message out, or we're basically just sitting in our little box.
Yeah, when I think about the like Band-Aid and We Are the World model, I grew up in the 80s, right? And the effect that it had. I mean, I'm curious though, like I remember as a young teen, I just wanted it to come on, MTV so I could literally see like, oh, that's the band that I like to listen to. Like I don't know how much of it as a kid I was really absorbing, and I'm wondering if you think that like what would you say is the role of pop culture icons in swaying public beliefs versus the role of pop culture itself? Is it the song? Is it the message? Or is it the artist that makes these songs powerful?
I think all of that, again, and I don't expect every artist to stand on their soapbox and preach their views. Frankly, it's annoying. But also, you look in history, take the civil rights era, for example. You have so many songs that talk about that world and the fight for civil rights. And
Right.
if you look at that time as a collection of music, you get a sense of the times through those songs. And it's many artists writing their points of view. Many of them iconic artists writing points of view. So I think you certainly need the art makers, but that's kind of driven by culture,
Yeah.
right? I mean, we're going to look back in 30 years and see how dark this time was by looking at the arts, looking at the silence of the arts, looking at the songs, look what people said. It's going to be a horrible reflection of history. Does that mean that has to continue? No. So I think it's all of those things. I think, if the culture improves, I think you'll see that reflected in the arts. If it continues to crash, I think you'll also see that in the arts. But kind of like Zelensky in Ukraine, and kind of like Douglas Murray, if we have a couple bright lights, speaking truth, writing songs that matter, that people respect, and that young bands respect, that's how they'll start questioning their worldview. And maybe one or two of those bright lights kind of starts this kind of, revolution of sanity. But it takes courage to do that. And we need some folks to step. And it's not just singers, it's not just actors. It's anybody who has a platform. It's chefs, it's
That's right.
athletes, right? It's people that have a platform that people, frankly love and respect. And also there needs to be some coordination. And that's what doesn't happen in this fight. There's little coordination. You have a lot of silos wanting to do things. Everybody does something that's nice, but there's no coordination. The other side has billions of dollars, incredible coordination, amazing social media, billions of bots, Qatar funding it. They have all that, and that's why they succeed. And we need to understand, we better get, we're behind the game, but we better get in the game. Because if we don't, we will lose the game.
Speaking of the game, it's funny when you say that because listening to what you just said, I'm thinking about an ad that came out. It must have been around the turn of the century, maybe even the 90s, of it was like a basketball player, I think, and the ad was, "I am not a role model," because he was being held responsible for some personal views that back then it was very controversial. It's like, oh, all these kids are looking up to you. You can't behave in ways that aren't a role model. He's like, yeah, but I'm a basketball player. That's what I signed up for, right? That's a whole nother aspect of pop culture would be athletes. And of course, what we see going on, particularly in the soccer world, again, has been an extension of all of this. What we see going on in Eurovision, just losing the spirit of the arts, of art being a separate language that we can all speak and relate to, as you have quoted Andrew Breitbart as saying that politics is downstream from culture. Do you think that artists have an obligation if they're going to be politically active? I don't think they have an obligation to be politically active. To be like responsible and do their research and actually pay attention to what comes out of their mouth? Or do you think, as just people, like this basketball player was trying to say, as just people, that they can say whatever the hell they want?
Well, I think that might have been Charles Barkley, actually, who's turned out to be a
Yeah.
pretty good role model. I mean, the fact is, it's not a choice. When you have a big platform, you're a role model, and people listen to you, and what you say matters. You may not like it, and if you don't like it, just don't say anything. That's fine. But I do think you have an obligation when you have a certain platform to understand what you're talking about. If you say something, kind of controversial or something that has an impact, particularly on children. So yeah, but I also have, to a certain extent, no problem with people who don't want to get, into that arena. As I said, it's kind of healthy that actors and artists have started to lose their political clout. They kind of look like goofballs, which is good, because I think they kind of live in this bubble and they don't live in the real world. But it's also America. Everybody can say whatever they want, and I respect that too. So again, hopefully, we'll see people that have been a little more understanding about what's happened and just not jumped on a bandwagon. And but a lot of them are afraid for their careers, and it's sad to say, but it's you've seen this with a lot of folks who kind of lean to the right. They say nothing on their jobs on the set because they want to have a career. But the days in my mind of burying your head in the sand have to be over because the consequences are too great.
Because we've just gone over an hour, and I know originally your assistant told me I have half an hour, and this is like an ongoing theme with my show. I'm gonna ask one more question, though I have 100 more things I'd love to discuss with you. And the last question is, John, acknowledging that you are neither Jewish nor Israeli, what do the words "Am Yisrael Chai" mean to you?
I just have to say, I love the Jewish people. And I love the fact that you have Thanksgiving every weekend. I love the fact that you're crazy. You're crazy. After you get bombed, let's go swimming. I got stung by a stingray. It's like, you just have this joy for life. And your love of heritage and country and of each other and of life and of non-Jews, and just people. It's something that I think the rest of the world, if they were smart, would take to heart and employ in their own lives. So again, Israel will continue to survive. The Jewish people will continue to survive and flourish. And I think it's important for your listeners and Jewish people to understand that you are not alone in this fight. The vast majority of Americans support you. They support what you're fighting for. We share the same values. We're neighbors. Our kids play on the same basketball teams. We are as one. Just like we are with all of the good people in America and all people who cherish these values of freedom. So understand that it seems like you've been abandoned, and in many senses you have. But the vast majority of folks in this country have your back and stand side by side with you, and will continue to support you, not only in the thought arena, but at the ballot box and in all these other ventures. So again, what it means to me is fight the good fight. We're on the right side, and let's just continue to do it and hold each other up when we need to, and push each other forward as well when we need to.
Thank you, John. Thank you for being an amazing ally, a great American, and honestly, a Superman. And how many other of your songs can I quote? I just want you to know how deeply and broadly you're appreciated. So thank you so much for your time. And Am Yisrael Chai.
Shanna, you're a warrior. Folks like you are critical to this cause. Namaste. Love you. One day you can actually teach me how to do some real yoga.
It's an open invitation. What did you call it last time? Downward facing potato or something?
Oh yes, my favorite pose is couch dog watching Monday Night Football. So I'm very good at that
Or hockey.
one. Or hockey, yes, five for
Yeah.
fighting. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, John.
All right.
And thank you. Shabbat
Thank you.
Shalom.